Our first guest that we have coming up now, actually both of them were booked by our FDH Lounge New York Bureau, so we're grateful, as always, for his help on this. It was kind of funny, though, that he didn't realize how ironic it was to book this first guest, because, again, as everybody knows out there in our audience, the Sports Talk Network based out of Cleveland, and Cleveland is an area where our first guest actually captured an Emmy earlier in her career with the Morning Exchange, an iconic longtime program in Cleveland here. Moved on subsequently, and we've been able to watch her again in Cleveland in recent years, not because she's returned to local airwaves, but because she went national, first at CNBC and now with the Fox Business Channel. I could only be speaking of Liz Claman, and it's a pleasure to welcome you to the FDH Lounge, Liz.
Best location in the nation, Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, everybody.
You know, it's got to be a lot of great memories for everybody listening right now that was watching you on Morning Exchange back in the day. I certainly remember your tenure on that show, and, you know, I'm sure you have a lot of fond memories of Cleveland. Yeah, you did a lot here.
I did everything you could possibly jam-pack in for 3 years, whether it was Browns games, Indians games. Don't even ask how many times I went to Cleveland Stadium for concerts. We saw the Eagles reunion concert there. We saw everything, the Rolling Stones. I had the best time in Cleveland. And I have to tell you, I didn't want to go there when I first got the job, but I had no other job. And I was thinking to myself, had you told me I'd be coming to Cleveland in my life, I would have, because I'm from L.A., you know, I'm an L.A. girl. I thought I just wouldn't believe it. I can't believe my career has led me here. And my father, Dr. Morris Claman, had done his residency years ago, decades ago, at Mount Sinai in Cleveland. And he said, Liz, you are going to love it. And I did. News Channel 5, I worked with Ted and Wilma and Fred, the whole gang. It was the greatest experience of my news career. And I was in Columbus. I was at KCBS as a production assistant in L.A. I went to Boston after Cleveland. But my fondest memories of local news are Cleveland, Ohio. Absolutely.
And I tell you what, of the names you mentioned there, it was really interesting. It was about a month or so ago. Ted Henry finally retired.
I mean,
long time local voice on the airwaves here. Yeah, you worked with all of them at Channel 5 back in the day, and it was a heck of a run there. So you were in Columbus immediately prior to that, right?
Immediately prior, I was at the ABC station in Columbus. That was my first on-air market, where everybody said, you should go to the Midwest. When I was in L.A. as sort of a gopher and production assistant, the people whom I was driving around to stories were people like Jim Lampley and Ann Curry, Paula Zahn, Pat O'Brien, and they'd all say, go to the Midwest. That's where you should really start. And I didn't know the Midwest, and they said, that's where you need to go to do all the school board stories and the state fair stories. And so I targeted Ohio, Indiana, Iowa, and Wisconsin. And Columbus was alphabetically first on the list. I paid for my own ticket. I flew out. I knocked on the doors of the third-rated stations because I figured they'd take a chance on me because I'd never been on the air. And Columbus hired me. And it was sort of, you know, news reporting 101. But it was hilarious. I mean, we were the number 3 junkie station where they'd say, you know, first at 6, correct at 11. We got everything right. We were running around. But we had a helicopter and a couple of live trucks. But Cleveland, Channel 5, was the Scripps Howard flagship station, and it was quite the powerhouse. So when I got there, I was really in the game. And watching anchors, honestly, like Ted Henry and Wilma Smith, and Fred, of course, Fred Griffith, amazing, Lee Jordan, these people are so darn professional and so good at what they do that I learned so much from them. But Ted Henry, the best. What can I say?
Yeah, I mean, he had a heck of a run, and it doesn't feel like the same station without him on it, really. Well, you know, it's interesting. As you talk about those days, you talk about your earliest memories in broadcasting in Ohio here, and I connect it to something that I read, a quote that I read from you. This was about at the time you went to Fox Business Channel and you were giving some interviews and promoting that. And you were talking about your philosophy of delivering business news and about avoiding the mistakes that some people make in terms of making it too jargony and too much, you know, trying to sound business smart, you know, and drilling it down to the level that people can understand. And I wonder how much of that comes from your background with the news, the human interest stuff. I mean, that was really what you did first, it seems like, was learning how to talk to people and relate to people, here in flyover country. That probably plays right into what you were talking about, right?
Well, you get to Wall Street, and you begin to realize after a while that while people have a great understanding of their own little world, whether it's mortgage-backed securities or credit default swaps or bonds or precious metals, try and broaden that out, and they know nothing. And so I realized it's pointless to try and sound smart. Just be smart and explain things to people in plain English. Too many people in business television get in front of the television cameras that all they want to do is show how smart they are. Having worked in Cleveland and interviewing everyone from the mayor to the governor, back then it was Mayor Mike White and Governor Voinovich, and you know, Kucinich, listen, all the people there, everybody's last name's in itch, you know, I loved it. But what you had, and Ed Kovacic, the police chief, what you had were just terrifically smart, successful, or focused people, and you know, you don't have to try and impress people by, oh, look at all I know. And so when I came into business news at CNBC, I have to tell you, it was not the easiest transition. And boy, you come to New York, not a lot of people want you to succeed in certain realms. And it was just, I kept saying, listen, I'm a local news girl. Don't worry about me. I'm the least competitive person in that regard. I'm actually just interested in these CEOs and their companies. And you know, one day they had me interview the CEO of WD-40. And this interview is going on, what's your bottom line? What's your cash position? Finally, I said, what does WD stand for? And he said, water displacement. And I said, what's the 40? And he said, 40th attempt. The chemist who came up with it didn't give up after the third time, the 12th time, the 27th time, the 39th time. He hit it on the 40th. And to me, that's the great American business story of people who never gave up. They never say die. And you learn that in Cleveland.
Oh, wow.
So that I do think is part of the success I hope I found. But Fox Business is completely on that train of, let's make business news for the big boys on Wall Street and the smart people out there on Main Street. And that's something that nobody else is really doing. They look down on small businesses at a lot of these business networks because, oh, it's not publicly traded, forget it. Excuse me, small businesses employ 80% of the nation's workers. This is a big story. And at one point, frankly, IBM was a small business. So don't tell me it doesn't matter. And that's the story we want to tell at Fox Business.
Well, that is a very interesting story to tell, too. And I tell you what, and this, I'm sure this is something you're seeing at Fox Business Network. When you talk about big business, it's very interesting the way that they've really been adapting to the new climate in Washington, D.C. here. I've been seeing a lot of articles in the last week or so, some opinion pieces, but also some that have been more detailed, talking about how they're sort of getting in bed with big government and using big government to basically hold down smaller businesses from getting to be bigger. You build up these regulatory barriers enough, and some of these smaller companies won't grow and become a threat. So with Fox Business Network focusing as much on small business as that, I'm sure that's going to be something that you guys are looking at in the weeks and months to come.
It is so liberating because they tell me every day, you find a small business that's kicking tail and finding silver linings, we'll put them on. And we have, today we had a guy who went to law school, couldn't get a job as a lawyer, didn't want to be a lawyer. He started a roaming cupcake truck in Manhattan. He is doing amazing business. I found a woman out in Los Angeles who has waited her whole life. She's got a really funky, chic retail store called Java Jean Bar. They serve coffee and they sell jeans. And she does like the gift suites at the Sundance Festival and the Oscars. She's got very chic clothes, but she didn't have enough money to open up a store in her dream town, which was Beverly Hills. Well, guess what? All the commercial real estate is imploded now in Beverly Hills. She just struck a great deal to open a store in Beverly Hills for pennies on the dollar per square foot. So here's a great story of somebody who, where everybody else is imploding, she's finding a silver lining. I spoke to Warren Buffett on the air today on Fox Business, and by the way, he said the most amazing things, so many interesting things. You can see it on foxbusiness.com. The clip is all there. And he's in town for a charity lunch where he auctions off, have lunch with Warren Buffett for this charity he loves in San Francisco for homeless. And he talked about how, well, you know, we are jumping into a lot of things. He absolutely, though, believes that Barack Obama is 100% the correct person to be our president right now. He said that. I think he knows we've printed a lot of money and spent a lot of money to sort of float a bad situation and try and keep us from drowning. But you're right. I mean, we are looking. Fox Business is the only business network that filed a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit against Treasury and the Fed because they wouldn't tell us where the TARP money was going. And that's your money. That's your taxpayers' money. All we want, we don't want a muckrake. We just wanted to have transparency. Where's my taxpayer money going? Of course, we won the lawsuit. Nobody else was doing this. We won it, and what did we find out? Well, we found out that AIG had taken a ton of your money and paid off a lot of the big brokerages and a lot of the big banks who had also made bad bets. And I don't think it sits well with your listeners or the American people that these big financial institutions bellied up to the roulette table, made really crazy bets, which blew up in their faces, and now, I'm sorry, I have to pay for that? This is really crazy. But, of course, conversely, Warren Buffett would say, we have to save our banking system because we are a first-world nation. We are a great nation. You can't let the banking system go under. But these are all questions that Fox Business is happy to ask, and we're digging for the answers.
Well, that's great that you are. And again, on that Freedom of Information Act, you know, good thing you guys were there to be able to file that, because it's not like anybody at GE was going to go ahead and take them on in such a manner. But I, when I look at the situation here, it's funny because you move to Fox Business Channel right about at the time that they're getting underway, I guess in late 2007. You probably had no idea, or maybe you did. You were in business news for years prior to that, but what was about to come? Really, the earth has just moved under our feet so dramatically in the last 18 months or so. Talk, if you would, about what it was like to get situated at a new place. Everybody at Fox Business Channel is getting the feel of how they're going to cover this and how you guys are going to differentiate yourselves, and like you said, small business being a part of it. And then you've got all these world-changing events happening just as you guys are starting to hit your stride.
I know. People made fun of us when we went online That second week in October of 2007, mm-hmm. October 15th, we arrived. We were born. And people, I guess like a month, that was a high of the Dow. The Dow hit in October 14,000 and change. And then, of course, the implosion began shortly thereafter with Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, and Merrill Lynch, and people made fun of us in the media. They said, oh, brilliant timing to start a business network right at the start of a recession. Hey, you know what? It is brilliant timing.
Mm-hmm.
This is, it's not as welcome as the Super Bowl, but they needed us. Competition is a good thing in this realm, because I worked at CNBC for 9 years, and it was a great experience, and they are excellent at what they do, but what they do didn't necessarily include the whole nation. And we know that because they have a very remarkably powerful but very tiny audience, which is great for them. But we kind of started to ask the question, what are they doing wrong, but what aren't they doing? You're telling me that every single person in America doesn't care about their money and what's in their wallet and their portfolio? They do. But it just wasn't resonating the way that they were doing it. And you know, I had, as I said, a wonderful time at CNBC, but I knew it was time for me to leave because, I'd landed Buffett, I'd landed Bill Gates. I felt like I'd done everything I could do, and every time I'd pitch a small business story, they'd say, you can't trade it. You can't trade on it. It's not publicly traded. And I kind of thought that was a little myopic, and I was like, yeah, maybe I'll go to Animal Planet or something, you know. Hey, heck, I'll go to Al Jazeera. I'll be the first Jew on Al Jazeera. That's what I was ready for. I mean, I'm sitting there going, I'll do anything but this at this point. And then Fox announced. And I had already quit CNBC because I was held to a contract where it's called a no-compete. So I was just kind of sitting around deciding what to do. And when Fox called and said, we don't know what show you do or with whom you could work. We don't even have the set built. But we know this. We're going on the air in October. You know, it was like, 3 weeks earlier. You know, we'd like you, you know. And I couldn't even look at a deal until 4 days before.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and I knew I wanted to work with these people.
Well, that
again, I'm not your traditional Fox News type of person. I'm from the West Coast. I went to Berkeley, and everybody has this vision of what Fox is or what Fox is. I'm there, and they love it. I said, hey, do you mind? I'm kind of a tree-hugging sort of independent free marketeer. Do you care? They're like, we love it. Come on board.
Oh, yeah. You know, it puts the lie, I think, to a lot of the things people say about Fox. By the way, Liz, I think you gave us the material for our next promo there, First Jew on Al Jazeera. I think we're going to have to snip that. That'll go.
Hey, they wouldn't take me, though. I was going to let – no, listen, I didn't try. I don't think my father would have been too thrilled with that.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
No, it was the greatest thing in the world to walk in the door at Fox Business and be a part of a startup operation, which is something that's the one thing I had never done in my career. And to do that with visionaries like Rupert Murdoch, Roger Ailes, Kevin McGee, Joel Cheatwood, who had worked with me in Boston, all those people are now there, and it's just this neat place where Donnie Deutsch once said to me, you know, he's on CNBC, and he's a big advertising guy, and he said, Liz, when you walk into a winning operation, there's a personality to it. And you know it when you walk in. I've heard this about Google. I've been to Google. I was just there 2 weeks ago, and it's true. People are happy. They're psyched. They support each other. They give a lot of attaboys and great job, and it just there's a very open atmosphere to that. The early days, Microsoft was like that. You walk into Fox, same thing. There's an attitude.
That's what
that
comes
sort of
across.
A why not instead of why, and I love that.
Oh, yeah, that's what comes across on the air. It's interesting to note that's the case behind the scenes as well. But, you know, it's interesting in terms of the industry as a whole, Liz, and you having been at CNBC for many of the years prior to when we saw the market crash here, what are your thoughts of the critique of financial journalism that we hear from somebody like Jon Stewart, who's really, I think, throwing a lot of stones in a way? It seems to me a sort of, you know, phony populism as far as just, you know, he seems to be indicting everybody in much the same way as far as the coverage of it. I'm sure there was a lot of good coverage.
I was riveted for those couple of days with Jon Stewart because he wasn't wrong, okay? Now, it's very easy to throw stones, of course. The fact is, that I turn to this. First of all, in that first 2 months of Fox Business, we had people on. I'll pull out Peter Schiff of Euro Pacific Capital, who actually I went to high school with him, but he's on a lot of the business networks, and he came on and was this dissenting voice and said the Dow will go below 10,000 in the next 8 months. And you can't tell me that people didn't hear that it wasn't going to happen. They heard it on Fox Business if they watched. That was in our early, early days, and we continue to always provide the alternative of what is out there because it doesn't help if you just have a chorus of people singing, yeah, me too. That doesn't help anybody. So I actually kind of liked and supported what Jon Stewart did. The one thing that I turned to and explained to people, as far as all that imploded and blew up in people's faces, specifically these very weird derivatives that AIG had, these credit default swaps, which are insurance products, different from insurance because insurance policies, you actually have to have the collateral behind them in case the hurricane does hit. With credit default swaps, because they didn't call it insurance, they called it swaps, that predicated that they didn't have to have collateral behind it. So when all of these things fell apart after subprime and unwound, there was no pillow at AIG, and that's why we almost went into the toilet. It was a terrible thing. So for me, you had the smartest people in the room at the ratings agencies. These are these companies, Moody's, Fitch, and S&P, Standard & Poor's. These are the people who are paid to know whether something's healthy or it's going to blow up or implode. Even they didn't know. So how could I know? You know what I'm saying? It's not an excuse, but we actually, it's like saying, well, the patient should have been smarter than the neurosurgeon. How can I be smarter than the neurosurgeon? We have learned a lot from this experience, and that is spot the bubbles more quickly. I will say this, that in 2005, I sat on the set at CNBC, a couple of us did, and questioned the real estate situation. I said on the air, listen, I remember the dot-com bubble. This kind of looks like it when you have taxi drivers flipping condos in Boca Raton. Do you know I got hate mail?
Wow.
You're not patriotic. This time, this is something different. This real estate thing, it's never going to go down. This is the greatest thing for Americans, home ownership. Well, you know what? Home ownership is not a right. It's a privilege. Okay?
Yeah.
Hate to break it to everybody. It's a privilege. And if you can't afford it, you shouldn't do it. And we got into trouble there. But people don't want to hear the bad news. They just don't.
No.
Not like we didn't ask when we were at CNBC. We did, but boy, did we ask at Fox. But it was a bubble, and it'll happen, people. Sorry to say, it'll happen again. Well, I'm trying to figure out the next bubble. I'm thinking, you know, Treasury bubble. I already talked to Warren Buffett about that a couple of months ago. I started saying the sugar bubble. Sugar's the one thing that hasn't exploded in price. So is that next? I mean, I don't know. Commodities? Who knows?
Maybe as part of ethanol, huh? I mean, sugar could be as part of that whole thing, maybe.
That bomb has imploded, too, I think. Ethanol is a tough one now to wrap your mind around, especially since oil prices have come down. But we're just watching it closely. And healthy skepticism, not negativity, not pessimism, but healthy skepticism. And That's what I think Fox Business does, and that goes for both sides. We're not cheerleading the government. We're not cheerleading business. We're just trying to tell all sides of the story, and that's what you'll get on Fox Business. If you don't get it, it's your cable company. Complain. I'm convinced that the South Shore of Boston got it on Comcast because my mother-in-law called 50,000 times. I mean, complaining actually does work, but you should have choice. I'm not saying turn away from Bloomberg or CNBC. I'm saying fight for your choice, because we were the only ones to file a Freedom of Information Act and win it. For a brand new little network? Really? We did it.
Yeah,
and so we're the ones asking the tough questions.
That is tremendous, absolutely. And I tell you what, you anticipated with what you just said there perfectly, because then we always love to give a chance for our guests on the show to plug. You've done a tremendous job plugging the Fox Business Channel. You also have your book, of course, which I know people can still get, I'm sure, at least at Amazon or other places, The Best Investment Advice I Ever Received, Priceless Wisdom from Warren Buffett, Jim Cramer, Susie Orman, Steve Forbes, and dozens of other top financial experts.
Well, half the people in that book are now indicted, so. No, I'm kidding. But it's so funny because, of course, Cramer, I was at CNBC when I wrote the book, and he's had a bit of a fall from grace.
Mm-hmm.
And Angela Mozzillo of Countrywide, I interviewed him. This book was put together in 2005 and 2006, so of course at the height of the bubble. But I would argue there's some great investment advice in there. I've got to do a brand new one because so much has changed. But I would just say that it's worth it to people to check out Fox Business. And if you don't get it, complain or go on our website, foxbusiness.com. You'll see. But I always bring a little bit of Cleveland with me. I have to tell you, I'm always cheering on the Browns and the Indians.
That's painful.
I feel like I'm a transplanted Clevelander, even though I was born and raised in L.A. And it's only because the graciousness of the people and the time I had there will always be my most favorite part of my local news career.
You know,
Cleveland truly rocks.
The feeling is mutual. I tell you, our station president here, the Jedi Webmaster Paul Belfie. Oh yeah, Liz Klayman. Oh great.
Hi, Paul.
Belfie was really psyched when we told him we had this hooked up. And again, it's so funny because our producer in New York didn't even know about your Cleveland ties. I asked him, and
oh,
he
you're
didn't.
Kidding.
No. He was familiar with you from the national level. I said we know her in Cleveland. We watched her back in the day. It was just really funny how he didn't even put two and two together on that. We got you booked, without him even being aware of that. But I mean, it was a pleasure to have you on, Liz, and it would be a pleasure to have you back on here at some point and to keep
anytime.
Able to keep up. Well, you have a lot of fans here in our flagship city of Cleveland, and I know everybody's having a lot of great memories hearing you tonight, and just a pleasure to have you on, Liz.
I love Cleveland, and I am yours whenever you need me. Not a problem.
Thank you so much. The great Liz Klayman, everybody, from Fox Business Channel. A pleasure to have her on, and we will hope to do that again.